Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by Mr. Vin Forte. Vin, how are you?
Oh, man, it's like no time has passed at all since the last episode.
Yes. I love your Adidas hat.
Oh, thank you.
I like it. It's a nice maroon.
Yeah, color. Nice maroon. It's got the classic tri-leaf logo.
Is it true that it means all day long I dream of sex or sports?
No, but I'm going to choose. That's my headcanon now. I'm going.
Okay. Because I remember hearing either as a kid, that it means either one.
I don't know if that's their official story. Adidas has an interesting history because, like, them and I think, is it Puma or Fila? I think it's Fila.
Uh-huh.
Are brothers. Like it's a pair of brothers.
Really?
That, like, split off, and one has Adidas and one has Fila.
That's actually interesting.
And they're like competitors.
But not as interesting as today's topic.
No.
Speaking of brothers, well,
I was going to say,
that's not a good segue. Yeah. They're kind of like brothers. Today we are talking about Siskel and Ebert. Gene Siskel of the Chicago Tribune and Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times. I've wanted to do this episode maybe since the beginning of PCMC.
It's all been built. If you're listening right now, this is the finale.
No, the finale will never come. I'll die on air, and then Ben will have to edit it and then put it out. I've wanted to do this for a long time, and then we're finally doing it. I also, a book just came out about them, which I read and I love.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's called Opposable Thumbs: How Siskel and Ebert Changed Movies Forever by Matt Singer. It's okay. A really good read. It's a really good read. I'll explain it a little bit for the youngins. Siskel and Ebert, guys, it's like, it's from another time. Siskel and Ebert were two critics from Chicago, from two competing papers in Chicago, and they were both very good critics and well-known and good writers, and they kind of didn't like each other. They were competitors. And I forget whose idea it was. It started off as a public access show,
mm-hmm.
or like a PBS show maybe, where these two critics would go on and they would review a movie. They would show a few clips from a movie and give their opinions. And often they would disagree. And in the very beginning, they would actually just say yes or no. They just vote yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, like, there's like four different versions of the show. It would kept changing names and changing. By the end, it was owned by Disney.
Yeah.
And by when it got into the Disney years, that's when they came up with their famous thumbs up or thumbs down.
Really? It took that long?
Yeah, and they had a lot of silly bits in the early days. Like, they'd be like, it's time for the dog of the week, and then, like, bring out, like, a real dog.
Well, that's, like, one of my favorite clips of theirs is this is right when, like, video games were popping off in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And there's a clip of them, I think they're playing Punch-Out.
Oh, really?
But they're doing it on one of those, like, third-party gizmos where it's supposed to be, like you're really punching. Like, it's like a sensor bar, and it's like a proto Wii, but like the 80s. And, like, I think Siskel loved it, or maybe Ebert loved it too. But, like, later on, Ebert famously would say that video games are not art, which is one of the few big L takes that he has to hold for the rest of his life.
He has a few. They both do. I think that there's – I love them, and I'll guess I'll get into my history, but I want to know your history with them. But they have a lot of opinions that I think I don't agree with. What's your history with Siskel and Ebert?
Oh, I used to love watching them as a kid on the weekends. The only problem with that is because they were in syndication, there were times where you never quite knew when they were on.
Yeah.
But mostly it fell into like Sunday afternoon programming.
Mm-hmm.
And I would watch them. And then they always had like the competitors, like Laird Maltin's was hot ticket, something like that.
Uh-huh.
He was not as good, Laird Maltin.
I
would always watch them because, again, like, they really, you could tell they had respect for each other. Like, it was a good dynamic. Like, you could tell they had respect for each other, and it would always be like a triumphant moment when they were on the same page about something.
Yes.
And even better when they were on the same page about hating a movie.
Yes. And there's some great like them both hating movies, and then there were some great splits that are like people still talk about the splits. And I will get into some of that later. Yeah, I have a similar feeling. I'm a little bit older than you, and you know, when I was very, I always loved movies, and then I guess like around like 1996, after I became obsessed with like the first Scream movie, I was like, I want to make movies. I just became like super obsessed with movies, even more than I was prior to that. And on Sunday nights, it would play at like 11:30 or something, like late, and I would watch it then. And then there would be a double whammy, and this is gonna sound so like, I used to go down to the soda fountain and play jacks. Like, I used to watch that, and then after that on E, they would have a show called Coming Attractions, which was
Oh
just,
yeah.
it was just trailers.
I loved Coming
It
Attractions.
was just, here's three trailers for new movies, and I would watch it every week, and I was thrilled. And the same thing with Siskel and Ebert. See, even though it was the 90s, and even though the internet existed, it wasn't like now. There wasn't streaming, there wasn't high speed, there weren't tubes.
You weren't watching trailers online, like
Yeah, and even
even up to 99, like the last big, and I think you know which movie I'm gonna be saying, but the last big movie I recall that it was like, oh my God, I have to catch like Entertainment Tonight because they're gonna debut the new trailer on TV was Star Wars Episode One.
Can I tell you something? They You could download it from StarWars.com's official site. I started downloading it in the morning,
I was
and
going to
I
say, if you
went,
want to wait 15
yeah,
hours.
I went to high school, and all day I was like, oh boy, when I get home, I'll be able to watch it. And when I got home, I was able to watch like 95% of it. It's
Yeah.
nothing like it is now. Even Siskel and Ebert, I love the discourse and I love their opinions and I love them talking about movies. But sometimes I would go because I knew they were going to talk about a movie that I was interested in and I wanted to see clips. It was
Yeah.
one of the only places where you could see like clips like that or like a talk show.
Yeah, definitely. And
For like little movie nerd, like it was so important.
then it's funny because I feel like we both kind of caught the tail end of Siskel and Ebert because not long after in the late 90s Siskel sadly got he got cancer.
Brain cancer.
Brain cancer. And then those were some sad episodes because I remember they did episodes
He's a little
where
slower.
he was a little slower, or he would be calling in. So you would get like Ebert giving his very fluid in real time take, and they just cut to a picture in picture where like or where it's like Ebert there live and in person, and then just like a picture of Siskel, but again not with like a mic like I'm using right now to get very clear vocals. Like he was like calling in on a telephone because
Like a
he was
rotary
rough in the
phone.
hospital bed. Yeah.
Yeah, it was bad. And then Ebert died. He had a prolonged fight with cancer where he lost his jaw at one point,
Yeah.
you know, couldn't speak. It was crazy.
But
But yeah,
Ebert
we did.
also
We
spearheaded that crazy technology where if they've got enough of your voice, they could like it's kind of like the AI technology we have now.
Yes, yeah, you're right. Right, he could. He had like the Stephen Hawking thing, but it was his voice. Like he
Yeah.
would speak with recordings of his voice.
And he got really big into Twitter, like I kind of like that last era of Ebert where he was just like tweeting all the time.
And I often read, not so much with Siskel, but I often read Ebert's written reviews because I liked him.
Right.
I
He was a
liked
good
him as a
writer.
yeah. And you know what's interesting is they're both like, you know, obviously like movie guys and Mr. Movie critics, but actually they're both newsmen. They're both like newspaper guys, like
Yeah.
wonks in the world of journalism, like work their way up and then, you know, hang out in the city room smoking cigars and then like eventually just got into the role of film critic.
Yeah.
Let me tell you the names of their shows. The show started in 1975, and at that time it was called Opening Soon at a Theater Near You. A little
Wow,
bit
what a crazy title.
Yeah, a little bit wordy. That one from 75 to 77. Then from 77 to 82, they were on a show called Sneak Previews. And by the way, every time they would move, they would try to replace them. So there were all these like versions of the show with like critics that it just the magic wasn't there. Either they got along too much, or they didn't get along at all, and it wasn't working. And then at the movies with Siskel and Ebert was 1982 to 1986, and then from 1986 to 1999 it just called Siskel and Ebert.
But then didn't it turned when Roper came out, didn't it turn
Ebert and
back
Roper.
to at the movies?
Well,
Or
for a
wasn't
little
it at the
while,
movies at one point?
for a little while, yes, it was. Well, for right after Gene died, it was called Roger Ebert at the Movies, or Roger Ebert and the
Okay.
Movies. And then they put Roper's name. And then Roper died. Then when Ebert died, it was Roper and someone else, but it was never great. And I never really liked Roper, to be honest with you. The Roper years are like, yeah. Because he was too, he was younger and he seemed to, respect Ebert too much. And he was also from the same newspaper.
Well, it wasn't even that he respected him too much. I just thought he didn't have as nuanced takes as
No, he
Ebert.
was not. I didn't think he was a
Like,
good critic. I still don't
yeah,
think.
like Ebert, even if you do, the reason I think we both love Ebert is because even if you disagree with him, he'll give you his logic. He'll give you a good reason why it didn't, appeal to him. But whereas Roper, I feel like, would just kind of be like, oh, come on, Roger. Like, this was stupid. Like, what are you talking about? And like, he won't back anything up. Like, there's a very famous, I blanking on what they were reviewing, but it was like a very serious drama, like very, very like Oscar worthy kind of movie. And they were split on it. And Roper gave it a thumbs down. And he was like, come on, how can you give that Benji movie we reviewed a thumbs up, but you're going to give this movie a thumbs down? And completely forgetting that there's like a context to things, and Ebert fucking had to school him and be like, you fucking dope. Like, it's not about the thumbs or the stars.
Right, right.
Like, those are just there to get you in the door. Like, we're judging each movie based on what it's supposed to do. And as far as a children's movie is concerned that I'm going to bring children to, yeah, the Benji movie gets a thumbs up. Whereas this big, complicated movie, you know, for what it's trying to do, I think failed.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it was I know he did that with Robert, but I don't know if it was actually Benji they was referring to, because there's a very famous disagreement about Benji the Hunted between Siskel and Ebert, where they kind of really go for each other. And by the way, you can find a lot of this online, and there's also a famous video online of them shooting a promo, but it's like the behind.
Oh, yelling about Protestants?
It's the raw feed. It's the unedited feed, and they're like they're really hitting, they're really going at each other. I think in the beginning they really did dislike each other, and I think that they grew to love each other. Like at the end, like when Ebert got married very late in life, Siskel was like his best man.
Yeah,
but in the beginning, like there was like fun, like, and I got this from Matt Singer's book. They would fight over bullshit, like real, I forget, one of them's shorter. I guess Ebert's shorter. So they gave him a pillow to sit on. And then Siskel was like, why does he get a pillow? Why don't I get a pillow? So then they had to give him a pillow and then get a bigger pillow for Ebert. They're known as Siskel and Ebert. Ebert was like, why does his name get to go first? And then the producer was like, okay, I'll tell you what, every year we'll change it back and forth. And then after the first year, they're like, no, we can't change it now. Petty shit like that. But getting back to you saying about Ebert, right? And Ebert was always the one that I liked the most. Even though I don't agree with him that much now, critically. For me, it's like a little nerdy kid. The thing about Siskel and Ebert was like, what was revelatory to me about it was that they were grown-ups that were talking about movies in a serious way and sort of saying movies are serious and it's smart to talk about movies and it's good to care about movies. Like, I can't tell you how much little nerdy me needed that as a kid. Just to be like, oh, wow, like, being nerdy about something isn't just something that makes you an outcast. It's something that you could get a living out of. It's something that makes you strong. And that's what was so – and that's why they – you know, they – you could still – I mean, you could go to YouTube now and think of any classic movie. You know, Star Wars, fucking Beetlejuice, anything.
They've got a review of it.
Yeah, and type Siskel and Ebert, and someone will have excised it from the episode it was in, and you could just watch that clip. And context does change. Sometimes they like things that ended up not being good. Sometimes they hated things that we now think of as classics.
Yeah, like they, in a rare turn of roles, because you would think that Ebert would be the one to be more hip to this. Kids in the Hall Brain Candy was a review where Siskel like got it right away, you know, in a famous like reversal of roles, because you would figure Ebert would be the one to be into it.
Yeah.
Siskel loved Brain Kids in the Hall Brain Candy, and Ebert was the one that was like, I just don't find it funny. And he was like so stuck in the, I remember he was like so stuck in the mud about it. It's like, Ebert, come on, you're usually the guy that's like, giving the fringe stuff a chance. Like you of all people.
It would be interesting when sometimes either of them would do it. They would become very glib about something. Like as
Yeah.
much as they could be very deep about certain things, sometimes they're very glib about something. What's interesting is like if you look back at the clip, Siskel's not even like that. He gives it a thumbs up, but he's like, ah, it's funny, they're in drag. Like it's like he doesn't even like get what makes it that funny.
Right.
He's like, come on, the guy's just like, that's funny. And he obviously he's like, I don't really, I never watched the show. Like he's it's some it's interesting. I mean,
But the,
if we okay, yeah, go on.
then to your point, they'll pull something completely out of left field. Like I remember watching an episode where they did, because they would do this thing every once in a while where it would be almost like a sorry we missed it kind of thing.
Yes.
And they were talking about Batman Mask of the Phantasm, and they were like, man, this may just be the best. Like, you could make an argument. This is the best Batman movie
They gave it two
ever
thumbs up.
committed to film.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they
Yeah.
were like, this is not just like, oh, this is a Batman cartoon. They were like, no, run out to your video store and go get this.
They were interesting. Here's something that I think younger people might not even you can't even imagine this. They got famous. Like they were on Johnny Carson together. They were on David Letterman together. They were
Right.
on Howard Stern together. They were well known. They were in did they ever do advertisements? I'm not sure, but they were well known.
They could have done advertisements with Get In.
There's a great them on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson where they're on and on the couch with them is Chevy Chase and they're talking about like how they don't like Three Amigos. And like Chevy
Right.
Chase is Chevy Chase is usually a douchebag and
Yeah.
he's kind of like he's handling it well, I think. He's not being too aggressive. But it's fascinating. I sent you, I don't know if you saw it, I found something just recently. I didn't even know it existed. They did on an episode of SNL, they did a bit where they came out in the middle of the show where they reviewed the sketches that had been on earlier in the show.
Oh yeah, that's
It's
fantastic.
brilliant. And there's a few jokes in there, but their criticisms are pretty like real. And they even get off a good line where Siskel makes a joke about like there's not enough black cast members. Like he was like,
Yeah.
oh, maybe there were more black cast members, they'd be able to do that sketch right. So it's real. I mean, they were famous. Like and I really think they're the progenitors of like PCMC. They're the progenitors of a lot of podcasts, of a lot of YouTube video essayists, of a lot of YouTube reaction video people. Like critics were always thought of as like, I mean, there's different kind of critics. There's like academic critics like François Truffaut, who's like writing theory about, film. It's not really about whether it's good or bad. It's not about value judgments. It's about just meditating on film. But if you look at like reviewers were guys that wrote for newspapers. These two became celebrities in their own right.
Well, that's like to the point, to your point about them being celebrities, wasn't it? Was it the Roland Emmerich Godzilla?
Yes.
Where it had basically had them as not them, the real people, but had like proxy characters basically just to
Yes.
make fun of them.
Yes. Yeah. And what's funny is they gave that movie a bad review, but also were like, oh yeah, and there's characters based on us, but that doesn't matter. It's just a shitty movie.
Right, the movie still sucks.
It was because they think they didn't like, or one of them didn't like Independence Day.
It's like, okay, well, you got to realize though that you put them in your movie, you make fun of them. Okay, they still win. You put fucking characters in your movie
Exactly.
based on they would show up on I mean this whole series wouldn't exist but The Critic.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You're right. That whole series wouldn't exist without them. I'm interested. I watched a lot of them this week, and one of the things I was like sort of honing in on was their style as arguers, as debaters. So they have no problem agreeing with each other. But they also have no problem disagreeing. Like you think about like just normal polite conversation, right? You don't always want to disagree with somebody, right? Like somebody's
Right.
like, oh, did you see that thing? Oh yeah, it was good, right?
Well, the problem is some people can't take it, and some people also make things personal. And I don't think they ever really made it personal, and that's kind of the key to it. Because, like, I do several podcasts where I'm basically in a position to disagree with someone on a weekly basis. But like me and Emilio, when we do WrestleRap, like, we don't hate each other. We're able to yell at each other on the podcast, and then like after the pod, we'll go, "Oh, that was really good. Like, I liked how you got angry there." Like,
yeah.
Or, you know, debating something about sports on Oddball. I try and have a guest every week. So, like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, we're never going to align on everything, but I never, you know, make a guest feel like uncomfortable or pissed off. Like, there's an art to it that some people just don't understand.
Right.
Like,
I agree.
Go online now and they think, like, oh, well, like, I've got to stir up some shit. I've got to.
Right.
Like,
right. Well, yeah, there's a whole
really big hot
There's also
take.
YouTubers who kind of like are purposefully negative to get views, which is not something Siskel and Ebert are doing. They wanted to love a movie, and they always said that. They always said, like, I want to love a movie. I don't want to watch a bad movie.
Well,
I don't
it's
get
like
joy
Ebert,
out of it.
Ebert famously gave bad reviews to, I think, all of Rob Schneider's movies, and you know, famously said, like, or when he was, you know, going through his thing with cancer, Rob Schneider sent him, what, like, some flowers or something, and Ebert responded to that and said, He may make a bad movie, but he's not a bad man, and I look forward to the day that I can give him a good review.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, what's also interesting is often they would see artists will often make fun of critics and say, like, oh, critics, you're just failed artists. You can't really create things. And I always think that that's so dead wrong. That's totally missing the point. The point is the text itself. You care about the text. What's interesting with Siskel and Ebert is they do care about the text, but the thing they seem to most care about is the audience member. They seem to always, the point of view they always are coming from, even when they're fighting with each other, is
who's this for?
Who's this for? And does an audience deserve to see this? What does an audience deserve?
Right.
Siskel and Ebert often got into fights about children's movies, and Ebert would often say, like, oh, I think a kid would find this funny. But Siskel would always be like, well, maybe a kid deserves something better. You could see, like, opposites in philosophy, you know, and I think, you know, I think Siskel more than Ebert came from a point of view of feeling like there is an ideal perfect movie, and I can judge everything by that. Whereas I think, like you said before, I think Ebert was more relativistic, was more like, is this good at what it's doing? Like, people point to Ebert liking shitty movies. Like, Ebert gave a thumbs down to Home Alone, but he gave a thumbs up to Home Alone 3, the one without Macaulay Culkin.
Right.
But he's not comparing the two. But often, and when things would get dirty, they would do that thing where you go, how can you say you like this, but then you call that one bad? And then there were times where Siskel would make fun of Ebert's weight, which always was like, eh. Although that's kind of how they were known, right? If you knew the name Siskel and Ebert, you know one
right,
was
big,
the
big, tall man, one. Tiny, tiny, fat man.
Yeah, there's the fat one and then the bald one. Those were the two. But for the most part, they seemed to be respectful of each other. But they were also funny. Like, one of the things that Siskel would do more than Ebert is he would, like, when Ebert, because Ebert had a real talent, or Ebert had a real, I should say, he was bombastic. And sometimes that was really good, but sometimes he would, like, get on a soapbox that wasn't necessary at all. And when he would do that, he would open himself up, debate-wise, for one of the easiest counter-strikes, which was to go under and be like, what's the matter, guy? What's the problem with you? What happened?
Yeah.
Like, Ebert would be like, this comedy is terrible. This is wrong. This is... And Siskel would be like, where's your sense of joy? What happened to you? Like, you know, he would open himself up to that. And the big thing that I think movie fans now talk about is that they were both, and I don't want to say necessarily they were wrong, but they were both extremely hard on slasher films. Mm. All of the Nightmare on Elm Street, all of the Friday the 13th. And I understand their point of view. They were like real, like, feminists, and they were like, all these movies are is women being killed, and that there's nothing to them. And I I disagree. Well, first of all, we know now that there's a huge audience of females who watch those movies. So that's right. One thing. But, I do think that there's great value in slashers and horror. So I don't agree with them, but it is interesting to look back at how they were so vehemently against what was a huge trend at the time.
Well, the thing people also have to remember about them specifically is they're watching all the movies. We're not.
Yes, that's true.
So if we, you know, we're not watching slasher movies all the time because they're not, we're not going to them. They may be coming out. So if it's the, you know, the early 80s, where despite what, you know, certain pop culture man children would say, not you, but I'm saying this in general, certain like people of our age, you know, your age specifically would say, the 80s were not perfect.
Yes.
There was a lot of garbage coming out in the cinema.
Yeah.
And that included a lot of bad horror movies.
Sure,
so
yeah.
Just think, like, if you're Siskel and Ebert, every week on your litany of things to watch, it's got to be like, another one of these fucking slasher movies. Like,
yeah,
would be all the same.
Right, right. Critics do have to see everything, especially like newspaper reviewers. They would have to see everything. And that is tough. That's something we don't have to do. You know what I mean? I understand. In a certain perspective, I do understand where they're coming from. But also, see, one of their main things, and this is something I don't have at all, it's not part of my critical thinking at all, is that they seem to come from a point of view of movies should be nutritious in some way. And when a movie was not, they would be like, this movie gives you nothing. Like with the Friday the 13th, they'd be like, all it is naked women being killed. What does that do for you? I would argue that it could do something for anybody watching it. But also, I think that there's many different pleasures to get out of films, but they seem to always have a kind of moralizing of like, no, a movie is supposed to be uplifting.
Right. Oh, it's got to nourish your soul.
Right, right, right. Yeah. It's going to have some nutrition in it. And that's something I very much disagree with. But you know, one of the things that's interesting about them, is that there is a discourse. Like, critics are thought of as like these people who are pompous and think that they're correct about everything. And what you see with this show was, and I think this is what made them popular, they were disagreeing. They were disagreeing, but both being smart about their argument. It's not like one was a stooge where you'd be like, this guy's the dumb one, or this is the one who's always wrong.
Well, again, that's how I felt about fucking Roper.
Right. Yes, I agree.
I fucking hated Roper. Like, every argument would just, you would try and like talk down to Ebert. It's like, dude, what are you doing?
They were never able to replicate what Siskel and Ebert had. When they would leave the show to go to a bigger market, they would fill those spots with other critics. That never worked.
Do you remember when Ebert finally left?
Yes.
And like those final couple of years did like a show on PBS, I think it was.
Yeah. He did that, like, then there was a documentary about him.
But like when he finally decided to leave and take the whole thing with him.
Yeah.
Like you said, it was owned by Disney and they still had the rights to act the movies.
Yes.
So they, like, their last big, you know, swing and a miss was Ben Lyons and was it A.O. Scott?
No, it was Ben Lyons and Ben Mankiewicz. Ben and Ben.
Oh, sorry. Ben and Ben. Ben Mankiewicz and Ben. Yes. And
not good.
I was going to say, you want to look up some bad critic reviews? Like, that was bad. Talk about guys that had no chemistry.
Right. And they didn't always agree, but they kept the gloves on. They never took the gloves off.
Right.
Like, Siskel and Ebert would get mad because they would, like, if they loved a movie, sometimes you could tell, and I noticed this when I was watching a lot of clips this week, the format of the show is one would set it up and then the other would get the, like, second word and then they'd talk about it. Sometimes you could tell by the setup if they know what the other's gonna think. Because I think they do. It's interesting to ask this question. Like, I don't know. I think sometimes, I'm trying to remember if it was in the book. I can't remember. I think sometimes they were generally surprised by each other, but I think a lot of the times they knew what the other were gonna say. They at least knew the other's perspective, that it was a thumbs up or thumbs down. So sometimes you would see, like, the setup is really, really glowing, and you know, like, they're gearing up for a fight.
Right.
It's fascinating to watch these two guys. And I guess I did always like Ebert more. When I was a kid, I used to feel like I agreed with Ebert's thumbs up more, but I don't even know if that's true now as an adult. But you know, What's another thing we should talk about is the thumbs up, thumbs down thing. That's something that they had to do. But if you, their written reviews were much more nuanced, and
Oh,
even
yeah.
they were not very comfortable with it because they would put qualifiers all the time, like, oh, a marginal
It's a
thumbs up.
mild thumbs up. Like, I'm giving it a thumbs up, but it's not too exciting. Like, if you
Or
need,
two
like, yeah.
enthusiastic thumbs up. Like you would, and what's interesting is they would become part of marketing when they would give thumbs up. All, and this was all through the 80s and 90s, two thumbs up. Like there would always be a trailer with two thumbs up.
Well, it sort of dovetailed with the rise of the video store.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And
Yeah.
they would do like second looks with when things came out on video.
Right.
Yeah. And they also did special episodes, which I think were always good. Like we're only gonna talk about one filmmaker, or I actually watched one earlier today where it was like the movies that made us love movies. Like I always love those things too. They you know, for better or worse, I think the thumbs up, thumbs down thing leads to what we have now, which is the Rotten Tomatoes Metacritic issue.
Yeah.
Because Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic, people treat it like it's gospel, like it's written in stone, like, and really the whole, everything about it's flawed. I talked about this recently when I was talking about Ghostbusters, whereas like most written reviews have a, have negative, they talk about negatives and positives. So you have to decide which, you know, you have to make it, it's binary basically. You have to make it binary. I don't know who does it, but somebody at that website has to choose what a person's is. Like, 'cause you can look at a positive review, and then if you read the whole review, you'll see negativity in it. And it's like, okay, someone just judged
Yeah,
that it
it's like,
was
well,
more
what
positive than
someone's
negative. But
yeah.
also, it turns it into math. It's like, what did that movie get? That's a 100%, or that's a 60%, or it's like, that's become such a, we become so comfortable with talking like that about films. And I think it's, I don't think it's good. It's
Right,
bad.
because if a movie
I think
is
it's a little their
90%,
fault. Not that it's not their fault, but I think they led to it.
right, because if a movie is 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, but it's not what you're looking for, then that's a 0% to you. But if a movie is like 40% or like 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, most people would probably look at it and go, oh, I shouldn't bother with that. That's a bad movie. But all that could mean is just half the people who saw it, like it wasn't what they were looking for. But maybe it's what you're
Right.
looking for.
And also you've got the critic reviews and then the user reviews, which often don't reflect each other. And a lot of that becomes political. A lot of that, like when a movie becomes very, if a movie's very
Oh, like
liberal,
review bombing and
right, there's review bombing and there's just, you know, like the new Ghostbusters, it's the most, critically, it's the lowest rating of any Ghostbusters movie, but it has a high, user rating. So people are like, ah, the users, they're the real people. And it's like, you see fights like that. And one of my, I actually read a user review of the new Ghostbusters that I tickled me pink. It was so ridiculous. I loved it. Somebody wrote, and this, I guess, spoiler alert for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Some negative user wrote, one star. It was like too woke. This movie's about a young, a teenage girl who commits suicide so she could be with her lesbian ghost lover. Which is kind of in a weird way what happens, but it's such a conservative lens to look at it through. It's
Yeah.
hilarious.
Well, that's my least favorite thing about movies now is that everyone makes everything political or it has to be seen through like,
Yes.
oh, this is the woke lens. Like I saw a trailer recently for that new Star Wars Acolyte series.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I've been someone who's been fatigued with Star Wars for a while now. And I was like, you know what? I actually like this. This looks really good. It looks like it's gonna be a lot of fun. There's a lot of different characters in it, a lot of different Jedi. I'm down to check this out. But like the second I went in the comments, it was like, oh, you mean to tell me they couldn't find two white people in the same gal? It's like, okay.
Right, they're right. There are
Can we
people that are just
stop with
ready
this?
for it.
Like,
Right. It's all, everything has become politicized. Everything, and everything's become that binary. It's a problem. And I think, and they kind of started, but they were pushed into it. Like they were not very, you know, they didn't love the thumbs up, thumbs down thing, but it became
yeah.
something they had to do. And I believe David Lynch was the first person. Or not, maybe not Lynch himself, but I think Lost Highway, the David Lynch film, it got two thumbs down. And I believe they were the first to use that in their marketing. Two thumbs down. As if to be like, look how cool we are.
Right.
And then later on, Freddy Got Fingered used it, very, you know, like, yeah, I think it was in Roger Ebert's written review where he said, like, to call it bottom of the barrel would be an insult to barrels.
Yeah, this digs below barrels. But then I like he saw Stealing Harvard like a year later or whatever. And he made the review all that Freddy Got Fingered because he was like, you know, I see, you know, hundreds of movies every year. A lot of them good, a lot of them bad, most of them bad, in fact. But most of them I also forget because they just sort of come and go. Mm-hmm. I have not forgotten Freddy Got Fingered. And I don't know what that says, but it says something.
Yeah, well, actually, that's another thing, too. They would change their minds, which is something that a lot of people don't like to do, especially if you're very, like, you're very boisterous about the thing that you're claiming. But they would, when they would go and take a second look and be like, you know what, I think this about it now. And I think that's the way a person is. I have a bunch of movies here, and we don't have to do this too much. I think it'd be kind of a fun game. I'm sure some of these you know just from being a fan, but some you might not know. What do you think they gave Air Bud?
I'm gonna say they were split on it.
They were split. You were correct.
Okay.
Very correct. Ebert gave it a thumbs up.
Of course he did.
Siskel, Gene gave it a thumbs down. Let's see. What are some other good ones? Beavis and Butthead Do America. We did an episode of PCMC on this movie.
Yeah.
We might have talked about it then. I don't remember.
I'm going to say they give it two thumbs down and just didn't get it.
Two thumbs up, baby.
Two thumbs up.
Beavis and Butthead Do America. Two thumbs
Ow.
Up. It's shit. See, it's shit like that. It's shit like that that you're like, holy shit. Wow. Carnosaur. You know, remember Carnosaur? It's a Roger Corman straight-to-video Jurassic Park ripoff. They got a thumbs up from Siskel.
Wow.
Yeah. Trying to say some. I think I Googled. I tried to Google some of their reviews, but then I also looked for most confusing ones, like places where they were like, you're surprised. Junior, the film about fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger having a baby.
I'm going to go thumbs down.
That's two thumbs up, baby. Two thumbs up for Junior.
You know what I miss? They had, and this did not last long because not soon after, I think like that's when Disney, you know, rebooted the whole thing. But near the end of Ebert's tenure, they got a website together. They finally put together a website where it was like, watch, you know, look up and watch all the reviews from like, you know, 30 years of At the Movies history.
Mm-hmm.
And then that website went away, like, it didn't even last a year.
Interesting.
It's like, I wish it still existed.
Now it's all on YouTube, though.
Yeah.
They both like Superman, the movie. They both like Dawn of the Dead. Some of this stuff's so interesting, because...
How do they feel about Superman 3?
They both didn't like The Jerk, the Steve Martin, like, classic movie at this point.
Really?
Yeah.
But how do they feel about The Pest?
I don't know. I don't know if I have that here. They're split on The Elephant Man. Roger said no. See, it's things like that that surprise me. But then when I think about it, like, I could see him being like, oh, this movie's too depressing. It's too down in the dumps. Yeah. Like, that sort of moralizing he would do. They both gave, this is before it was thumbs. It was just yes or no. They both gave positive yes ratings to Popeye.
You know what? So do I.
Me too. I think it's a weird fucking movie.
Right. It's weird, but it's a movie that I never knew until later on in life that people actually like maligned at the time. I was like, what? Popeye?
I know. They both like Swamp Thing.
Okay.
They're split on Blade Runner. Gene says no. Roger says yes.
I say no.
Blade Runner. Yeah, I'm not a Blade Runner fan. Wow, this is one. Two thumbs down on Thriller. Michael Jackson's Thriller.
I guess that. He reviews
Thriller. Well, it was like a movie at the time, right?
I guess.
Two thumbs down.
Yeah. How do you give two thumbs down to? Now I need to watch. That's the review I need to watch. It's like, I want to know how you give two thumbs down. Like, what's the criteria? What could they have done in that video to have
I know. Made you like, there's got to be like a hook where they hate it. They had a big, famous, fight over Blue Velvet where Gene liked it and Ebert hated it. And Ebert's whole thing was that the movie demeans Isabella Rossellini by making her like walk around naked and be abused. And Sisko would be like, well, first of all, she said she loves the movie, so you don't have to defend her. But it's interesting because it's like, I mean, Blue Velvet is like, that's a pretty classic movie. Split on Terminator. Roger liked it, Gene didn't. Two thumbs up for Goonies. They were split on Terminator 1, but they both gave thumbs up to Terminator 2.
Well, they better.
They also both gave thumbs up to Rocketeer. But they're split on Silence of the Lambs. Siskel did not like Silence of the Lambs. Oh, two thumbs down on Addams Family. A fucking
Okay.
classic, if I say so.
I don't know. I was more an Adam's Family Values kind of guy.
Two thumbs down on Army of Darkness. This one's really interesting. Two thumbs up on Naked Gun 33 and a third. Wow, guys. Two thumbs down on the Flintstones. I actually just rewatched the Flintstones
I
because
love it.
Alamo played it, and it's fucking great. I like that movie. First of all,
It
the
knows exactly what
puppetry.
it's doing.
Yes. And the puppets are great. The designs are. That
The
movie's
Halle
good.
Berry is great.
Come
The
on, guys. Come on. It's
Kyle
fantastic.
MacLachlan, like
Come on. I know. That's Prime McLaughlin.
the casting in that movie is just fantastic. Like, you could not have done better casting for a Flintstones movie for that principal cast. Like,
Yeah.
John Goodman is Fred Flintstone and
Come on.
fucking Rick Moranis is Barney.
Come on. Sells itself.
You know what's crazy? And even though you're a few years older than me, I think it's the same kind of situation where Flintstones is from the 1960s.
Yeah.
We just knew about it from like osmosis. Like you just come out of the womb knowing about the
Well,
Flintstones.
I think, well, from
And
my,
like we were all hyped for the
I watched
Flintstones
it.
movie.
See, but I was a kid in the basic cable age, VHS age, but before
Oh
the
yeah.
internet.
Yeah,
So like,
I would watch it on Cartoon Network.
right, so I've seen so much stuff that was syndicated. I saw all of Happy Days. I
Scooby-Doo.
saw all of Scooby-Doo, right? I saw all of I Love Lucy. Like I didn't seek this shit out. I saw so much of Bewitched, and I don't know if I ever liked it. Like I saw
Yeah,
all that shit.
that is true. There are some shows that I saw on TV all the time where it's like, I would never watch the Andy Griffith Show now.
Yeah, but I watched so much of it. When I was
Yeah,
a
I
kid,
remember.
I watched so much Murphy Brown. And I was a
Yeah.
child, and I'm like, ha ha, I love the way she sticks it to Dukakis. All right, Ben. This has been our episode on Siskel and Ebert. We did it.
Guys, we're ending on
Yeah,
Dukakis.
absolutely we are. Vin, what's going on in your podcast? What's going on in your world?
Wrestling.
Yeah, WrestleMania is over by the time people listen to
WrestleMania is
this.
over, but yeah, WrestleMania is this weekend in live time. But by the time you hear this, it'll be long over. We'll be on to SummerSlam by then.
Yes. We're all anxiously awaiting SummerSlam. Vin, thank you so much for being here. We end every episode by saying
Go bye-bye.